Part 4. Part 4 consists of two tasks. You will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about their experiences traveling abroad. For questions 21 to 25, choose from the list 8H the person who is speaking. Now look at task 2. For questions 26 to 30, choose from the list 8H what each speaker is expressing. While you listen, you must complete both tasks. Speaker 1.
I've worked here for many years, and it's now possible to tackle the Sydney Harbour Bridge from the inside. Since 1998, visitors have been able to teeter over the top of the structure if they were brave enough to reach the apex, 134 metres above the sea. The new climb, through the core of its construction, means you can now marvel at this much-loved landmark from the interior. In addition to the stomach-churning views of the harbour, you get to climb up the staircase between the inner and the outer arches to reach the top. I can tell you, this is what's really attracting the crowds. I've never been so busy.
Speaker 2.
I've just returned from my 67th visit to Iceland. But when I mentioned this interesting fact to a friend, he politely pointed out that I was pathetically sad. Don't I have anything better to do than count how many times I've been to the same place, and haven't I recorded everything there is to know about it? But actually, I don't agree with him. Well, not entirely, anyway. I think it's been time well spent. But on the other hand, maybe he has got a point. Can I justify going back to Iceland? I do love it there. Or should I strive to go somewhere new every time I go away now, so that I really broaden my horizons? We'll see.
Speaker 3.
I thought my days in Colombia's coffee region would begin with a freshly ground coffee and perhaps a maize cake and some scrambled eggs while I gazed at the mist rising in the valleys. I couldn't have been more wrong. We were up at the crack of dawn and marching up the mountain before I was really awake. Once we'd reached a fair way up, the instructors from the nearby town attached a wire to the cable above me in a casual manner as I wondered how safe the clips were. They assured me that everything was fine, and before I knew it, I was speeding across the coffee plantations, held on only by the aforementioned dubious clips and cable. Of course, they were right, and I had the ride of my life and remained in one piece.
Speaker 4. It was mid-August, and I was on a ferry that was more crowded than an Indian riverboat. I had a few hours in between flying back to the UK, and I thought I'd pop over to see the joys of Venice. My family had flown out for a few days, and I'd met up with them while I was off duty. As Campanile came into view, it looked stunning. "Is it really floating in the water?" asked my two children nervously. They looked shocked when I told them that it was actually sinking. As soon as we disembarked, Joe stamped his foot on the pavement and his younger sister looked up at me expectantly. "There you go, safe as houses," I said. They seemed reassured, but I got some funny looks from the locals.
Speaker 5.
It was a beautiful drive down to the Italian forest in our search for truffles. I was with one of the world's experts on fungi, and I could think of nobody better qualified to teach me how to prepare this delicacy. We went armed with a funny-looking helper in the form of Kiki, a scruffy, grey-haired dog that bounded out of the truck with great enthusiasm when we finally stopped in the forest. "He never fails, Emmy," said my companion. It seemed that Kiki was the region's best truffle hunter. I found this a little incredible. How could a dog find truffles buried in the ground, especially in such a dense forest with so much thick vegetation on the ground? But my doubts were proved to be unfounded. Kiki certainly was the canine king of truffle hunting. That night, we dined on the exquisite rewards of our hunt, and I had another delicacy to pass on to my customers back home.
Now you'll hear part 4 again. Speaker 1.
I've worked here for many years, and it's now possible to tackle the Sydney Harbour Bridge from the inside. Since 1998, visitors have been able to teeter over the top of the structure if they were brave enough to reach the apex, 134 metres above the sea. The new climb, through the core of its construction, means you can now marvel at this much-loved landmark from the interior. In addition to the stomach-churning views of the harbour, you get to climb up the staircase between the inner and the outer arches to reach the top. I can tell you, this is what's really attracting the crowds. I've never been so busy.
Speaker 2.
I've just returned from my 67th visit to Iceland. But when I mentioned this interesting fact to a friend, he politely pointed out that I was pathetically sad. Don't I have anything better to do than count how many times I've been to the same place, and haven't I recorded everything there is to know about it? But actually, I don't agree with him. Well, not entirely, anyway. I think it's been time well spent. But on the other hand, maybe he has got a point. Can I justify going back to Iceland? I do love it there. Or should I strive to go somewhere new every time I go away now, so that I really broaden my horizons? We'll see.
Speaker 3.
I thought my days in Colombia's coffee region would begin with a freshly ground coffee and perhaps a maize cake and some scrambled eggs while I gazed at the mist rising in the valleys. I couldn't have been more wrong. We were up at the crack of dawn and marching up the mountain before I was really awake. Once we'd reached a fair way up, the instructors from the nearby town attached a wire to the cable above me in a casual manner as I wondered how safe the clips were. They assured me that everything was fine, and before I knew it, I was speeding across the coffee plantations, held on only by the aforementioned dubious clips and cable. Of course, they were right, and I had the ride of my life and remained in one piece.
Speaker 4. It was mid-August, and I was on a ferry that was more crowded than an Indian riverboat. I had a few hours in between flying back to the UK, and I thought I'd pop over to see the joys of Venice. My family had flown out for a few days, and I'd met up with them while I was off duty. As Campanile came into view, it looked stunning. "Is it really floating in the water?" asked my two children nervously. They looked shocked when I told them that it was actually sinking. As soon as we disembarked, Joe stamped his foot on the pavement and his younger sister looked up at me expectantly. "There you go, safe as houses," I said. They seemed reassured, but I got some funny looks from the locals. Speaker 5.
It was a beautiful drive down to the Italian forest in our search for truffles. I was with one of the world's experts on fungi, and I could think of nobody better qualified to teach me how to prepare this delicacy. We went armed with a funny-looking helper in the form of Kiki, a scruffy, grey-haired dog that bounded out of the truck with great enthusiasm when we finally stopped in the forest. "He never fails, Amy," said my companion. It seemed that Kiki was the region's best truffle hunter. I found this a little incredible. How could a dog find truffles buried in the ground, especially in such a dense forest with so much thick vegetation on the ground? But my doubts were proved to be unfounded. Kiki certainly was the canine king of truffle hunting. That night, we dined on the exquisite rewards of our hunt, and I had another delicacy to pass on to my customers back home.
That's the end of part 4.